Good evening and welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode. Today we're going to mix things up here a little bit. I have a guest with me, and I'm going to spare no time here. We're going to introduce her right off the bat. Shannon LeGros, welcome back to the program. It's excellent to have you here.
Thank you so much. It is excellent to be back.
Well, everybody, you should know Shannon as the host of Into the Fray, and she's also a book publisher with Beyond the Fray Publishing and a documentary film star with a whole series of small town monsters documentaries. If you don't know who Shannon is, you probably should check her show out, Into the Fray. It's definitely one of my favorites and a show that I've been listening to for almost a decade now. How long have you been running Into the Fray?
Oh my gosh.
Well, it's got to be 10 years, right?
Years going on, maybe it's 11 years. Yeah.
Wow. So you're a pioneer at this point.
I don't know if I'd use that word, but I guess I'm gutting it out, as they might say.
You got 3 years on me, and I've been around a while, so congrats on your longevity.
Thank you.
Well, we got Shannon in-house here today to go over some calls. So what do you say we get started with our very first call, Shannon?
Let's do it.
Well, this one comes to us from, I guess, my hometown, almost technically. This is Zach's entry from the state of Ohio.
Hey, Derek. So my name is Zach. I live in Grove City, Ohio. The story happened when I was younger. Can't exactly remember how long ago it was. I was probably like maybe 10 or 11 at the time. And it took place in Byesville, Ohio, which is near Salt Fork State Park, which is somewhat known for Bigfoot activity and stuff like that. So at my grandparents' house there in Byesville, every time I'd be there past like dark hours, I would feel really, really uneasy, like something was watching me, watching us from the windows, like, or like out in the woods. And the way my grandparents' house is it's on this big, long, windy road through the woods. Their house is right off the road. They got a pretty good sized backyard that cuts off into the woods. And this one night, we were having a big party. I think it was a holiday or something. And I just had that uneasy feeling again. My dad asked me to run out to the truck to grab something for him. And I just did not want to do it because I just had this weird, uneasy feeling about me. Like something was out there watching me. I didn't end up going out. So night went on. We ended up leaving. And while we were on the freeway, I looked over at my brother. He's 2 years younger than me. And noticed like a smudge on my dad's rear windshield. So I looked and it was this just massive muddy handprint, and it was just muddy and smudged on there. But they had like hairs and like little crumbled up leaves in it. I showed my brother and he was freaking out with me. And as soon as I saw that, just a chill ran down my spine, like that the uneasy feeling I had whenever I was there, like, meant something. I showed my dad, he looked at it through his rearview mirror, and he had to turn around and look at it. He's a huge, huge skeptic. He just didn't believe that. He thought one of us might have done it as, like, a prank towards him. He just did not believe us. But by the time we got home, I wanted to get out and take a picture of it, but once we got home, it was gone. It was like it was never there. It's not much. I know it's not an actual like physical sighting of a Bigfoot or anything, but I just thought that was really, really strange. And to this day, going out there when it's past dark, I'm 24 now. I still feel super, super uneasy. Anyway, appreciate what you do. Love the show. I've been listening for a while now. I hope you can use this. Thanks.
Thank you, Zach, for sharing the entry. Now, Shannon, this call takes place in Baysville, which is literally like 6 miles from my dad's house where I grew up. It's right down the street. I have a couple family members that live there. And this is sort of a low-lying area, kind of swampy, I guess, from what I remember at least. And lots of wilderness, you know, kind of butting right up to that community. Plus, that's the Bigfoot Triangle area. And I know you're familiar with not only the Bigfoot Triangle, but the Grassman of Ohio, and you've spent some time there actually investigating. What's your overall thought here on Zach's entry, the handprint on the window? What do you think of all that?
Well, of course, my Bigfoot spidey senses and love of the subject, my ears perked up when I heard Zach's call. And you know what really struck me at the onset is the fact that they were having this big party at the house, right? And mm-hmm. I think that for that portion of that evening, I would imagine that the Bigfoot's probably like, well, there's something kind of different going on at this place tonight. Let me go check out what's going on. I would love to know what direction the car was parked in relation to the house. You know, a lot of places in the United States, they don't, and I know that people on Into the Fray have heard me say this, like people in Seattle have a habit of not closing their curtains and blinds at night. So it's kind of like this fishbowl aspect where and everything can look in. So I would love to know, you know, what direction was the car facing? Like, was he just kind of leaned up on that back window and was just checking everybody out, doing their party times inside the house and how that happened? But where did the handprint go? A part of me is kind of going, did it rain? Is there some paranormal side to this? Why did the handprint, if it's full of mud and leaves and all this other stuff, just by the time they got home, it was gone? That was strange.
Yeah, he didn't mention if it rained or anything like that, but I kind of imagined it was more condensation from the hand and it just sort of dried up and went away, and maybe the leaves fell off as a result of that. That's sort of the idea that I had of it there. And, you know, you touched on something that I never thought of, but as soon as you said it, like, bells and whistles went off in my head. There's a video of a Sasquatch encounter. I believe it's in Minnesota or Wisconsin, somewhere up north. It's very snowy, but this is a Christmas Day video. And there was a party, like a Christmas party going on, and they were filming around the kitchen, and they shoot through the window, and suddenly you see this creature sort of run across the yard, and that catches everybody's attention. They're outside filming this thing for a few seconds. The dog goes after it, I think, and it's sort of hiding in the tree line. Typical Bigfoot stuff, you know. But as soon as you said, you know, there was a party going on, that clicked in my head. Like, yeah, it was attracted to the sound. You know, dozens of people in a place where they're not normally hanging out. If this thing is normally hanging out there, they're like, hey, something's different. Something's weird. What is that sound? And for it to go investigate, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I just feel like we're, a lot of times, they're entertainment. I would imagine that watching deer run around and squirrels, you know, collecting food for the winter gets boring. So why not come in and look at the hairless things for a while?
Exactly. Yeah. that's one way to look at it. And, you know, the handprint on the back of the vehicle, I've heard of that too. There's been a handful of cases throughout the country of Bigfoot handprints, I guess. There's a few castings that I've seen at different conventions and stuff. And there's a few videos or photographs, I guess, floating around of supposed Sasquatch handprints on vehicles just like that. And I'm going to try to link to all this stuff, including the Christmas video, in the show notes. So if you want to go check all that out, you certainly can go in there and have a look at all that. But this is behavior we've heard of before.
That's a really good point about the handprint, though. See, in my mind, isn't that funny how just different interpretations of, you know, what this picture becomes in your mind? I saw this big, muddy, sloshy handprint, like he had, you know, actually been in mud. But yeah. Your way sounds much more plausible and down to earth than mine. So.
Well, you know, there's no image, so we don't know for sure what it looked like. But
right,
collection efforts.
They hear it.
Come on, folks. Let's face it. Sometimes breaking a bad habit can be as hard as getting a photo of Bigfoot. But that's where tonight's sponsor, Fume, comes in. It's not about giving up. It's about switching up. Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavor air device that does just that. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural.
and instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. You get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy and makes replacing bad habits easy. When I first heard of Fume, I couldn't wait to try it. I wasn't sure what to expect, but I find the flavor so refreshing. My favorite right now is the peppermint. The look of the device is really cool. It's made with real wood, and the sleek shape looks and feels really nice. Fume is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, so it gives my fingers something to do, which is helpful for de-stressing and anxiety. I use mine all the time here in the studio. It keeps me from snacking too often. So start the year off with a good habit by going to tryfume.com/monsters and getting the journey pack today. Again, that's tryfume.com/monsters. Fume is giving MAU listeners 10% off when they use the code MONSTERS to help make starting the good habit that much easier. 909.
This is a squatchy area, as people like to say. It's only maybe 10 miles, if that, from Salt Fork State Park, which is an area I know you're familiar with. You had an experience there, is that right?
Absolutely. It was something that really took me from, they could be out there too. I'm pretty dang sure they're out there. And it was just this low monotone whistle in the middle of the night at the service road that we had gone back on. We happened to run into a guy that had an experience, and he's like, let me take you to where I had my experience. So I was like, okay. And yeah, this whistle came from an area that I just don't even know how someone could get to, because if you've been to Salt Fork, you know how brushy and thorny it is. And it definitely was in that area. And yeah, anyhow, we were just trying some different things, and this low monotone whistle came from ground level right in front of us. And it sounded like the most big old screwed up, maybe monkey bird I'd ever heard. And it sounded like a huge, something screwed up with lips. And I went from standing to a crouching position, because I don't know, that's just what I did, and make myself into a smaller, tasty little ball.
Yeah, I don't think that's the right move to do there. I think you want to get bigger.
Get bigger and get ready to run. I was like, I'm giving up, I guess. Here I am, take me now. That actually really bumped me into the 90th percentile without actually seeing one, which is what I would, of course, love to do to get that 100% confirmation. But yeah, that was fantastic. And that was Salt Fork State Park, the primitive campground site.
Oh, I know exactly where that is, yeah.
Cool area. It's actually called Bigfoot Ridge by chance, but yes.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They do call it Bigfoot Ridge, yeah. You know, it's funny, growing up there, I was there in that area for about 20 years, my first 20 years of my life, and I went away to college. But I never heard a lot about Bigfoot there growing up. Then again, there wasn't the internet and a lot of other things, a lot of the outlets that are now used to share this information. But I just don't remember the stories. There's a few personal encounters I remember hearing, like my neighbor Frank, actually, he was a coon hunter back in the day. And one time he was hunting by himself, and his dogs chased something into a briar patch. And he said whatever was in there was making sounds that he'd never heard before and didn't sound like anything he'd ever experienced in our local area there. And it was scary enough for him that he gathered his dogs and left. And I think he quit hunting for a while after that because of that encounter. And to know this guy, he's not afraid of things. Like, he's worried about anything like that. I've never known him to be anyway, and this seemed to shake him up. So, there are certain encounters there. And I actually dug up, I knew you had a vocalization experience in Salt Fork. So I was trying to find another vocalization from that area to share. And, I struck out, unfortunately. I wasn't able to find anything. But I did find a video from nearby Loudonville, which is maybe 2 hours north, if that. And I want to play this for you right now, Shannon, and I just want to get your opinion on what this is. Now, this video clip was taken from the Akron Beacon Journal.
Thank you.
Now, in that clip, you can clearly hear frogs croaking in the distance, and then you hear that long, sustained howl that, in my opinion, can only be one of two things. Bigfoot or some other ape, because you hear apes do these sounds all the time, or another human out there, possibly Bigfoot hunting, you know, blasting his calls out into the wilderness there. I want to get your initial opinion on this. I know it's not a whistle like what you heard, but what do you think of this sound clip?
See, a lot of people go, time to go inside. But for the rest of us, it's like, time to grab the thermal and get your butt in the woods.
Grab the flashlight. Let's go.
I mean, first thought is I could also hear then the dogs start to go crazy, mm-hmm. which is something that we hear over and over. And that happens even if coyotes begin, you know. And that wasn't like, of course, like you said, it isn't like what I heard. But it is something that we've heard over and over are these long peals of screams. And you're going, well, it's a big set of lungs and it sounds like it's got a pair of lips. So yeah, it can only be one of two things. And you know, it's funny you bring that up, the other Bigfoot researchers calling to the other Bigfoot research on the other hill, and that can happen, right? And a lot of people have said that, especially in places in regards to like Salt Fork, where it's known for Bigfoot. So a lot of people go there for that particular reason. But I would hazard to say, for the most part, you just, especially when you're there, the recordings don't do the sounds justice. If you're there, you can, for the most part, even though you can't see what's making the sound, there's just something off about it, to where you go, it just doesn't sound like a person. And I know for a fact that what I heard was not. Now, if this happened to be a new species of bird that had lips, fine, I'll believe you. We'll go benefit of the doubt on that one. But I know that it wasn't a person, because we had been there for hours, and I don't know how they could have gotten in that brush right in front of us with all the thorns without us hearing it, you know.
Sure.
So there's all these other extenuating circumstances that knock these other things off the list. And I'm sure that if we could talk to those people that recorded that, they would go, man, you know, Derek and Shannon, if you guys could have been there, like, this doesn't do it justice. Like, we know this isn't, you know, our neighbors or Bigfoot hunters. And that's the problem with getting recordings. It's not always the end all be all. It's not, where's the video? Where's the audio? This would make your story so much more believable. Well, it doesn't most of the time, because it sounds very muddled and it sounds not nearly as impressive as if you were actually standing there with this thing.
Yeah. You know, I can only imagine what it actually sounded like there in person, because, like you said, these recordings don't do it justice. I mean, it's the same thing with photographs. And a lot of people have that problem when they encounter what they think is a Sasquatch, Bigfoot, whatever. They try to take a picture, and of course it's blurry because it's moving, the person's moving, they're probably shaking and all nervous and scared. So, you know, the elements just don't line up there. And I'm sure it's frustrating for those people to hear it and see it in these circumstances, and then try to capture evidence only to find that this doesn't hold a candle to what the real experience was really like.
You know, I don't know if you and I have spoken about this on your show, but I went to the Brown property in Washington State years and years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And Sarah and I were outside. There had been, you know, something over some brush that we're doing a measurement situation where you're going to compare something, and she's taking photos. And it's like a year gone, and she goes, I was going through these to start to delete some of these files, and you're not going to believe what was out there with us that morning that somehow we miraculously did not see, and I have no idea how. And this is really, it's one of the clearer photos that I've even really ever seen of a cone head, and you can see the brows and eyes.
Wow.
And the hair, the fur, whatever you want to call it, peeking over this very tall brush. And, you know, you post it, and with all the back explanation that this is 7 foot tall brush. So this thing is over the brush, right? Very simple, a math equation. And people are going, that's a deer's behind, and it's a beaver. Sorry, I don't know why I just did an accent.
That's what all skeptics sound like, I think.
Sorry, folks. Never mind me listening to the fray to be pissed off more. But no, you're kind of posting these very right in the top of the post, and people always have their own explanations. And to me, I'm going, oh my gosh, you guys, it has a brow ridge and a cone head, and the way the light hits the hair and the fur, you can tell it's like a real thing right there. It's boggling to my mind. And then so when you talk about posting people's photos and where's the video, Trust me, it's not going to help anybody. I've learned I just don't even post it anymore. And I think it's one of the coolest photos I've even ever seen. And I happen to be kind of a little bit of a part of that. So I get it, where people are like, you know what? It's not posted in the Bigfoot group. No, please stop.
That happens a lot. You know, people get some sort of evidence and they're kind of bashful about sharing it because of the ridicule that people receive.
Yeah.
It's a shame that it has to be, because nobody knows for sure, you know. I'm sure that you and Sarah, you're not certain what it is. I mean, you think maybe it could be a Bigfoot, but nobody really knows for sure because there's no way to prove that. But
yeah, we didn't say, hey, there's a Bigfoot. Let's see if it'll say cheese for us. It was something found, you know, months and months later after she's going through stuff. But it had the date and the time. And she's like, oh my gosh, that's when Shannon and I were out there doing these comparative measurements for things. And
somebody was watching.
So, yeah. Little creepers.
Yeah. Terrifying. Terrifying concept.
Yeah. Because something that big, just we didn't see it, didn't hear it, comes in, comes out when it wants. And that's pretty obviously their MO, and they're very good at it.
Scary stuff. Well, let's move on, Shannon, because I have a whole bunch of calls I'd like to roll here with you this evening. But first, a quick break for our advertisers.
Southern Water, what is Flash? AM 590.
Well, welcome back. I have with me Shannon LeGros, and we're going to continue rolling some calls here this evening. This next one comes to us from that state up north. The following is Sean's entry.
Hi, my name is Sean. I'm from a small town, Romeo, Michigan, and this incident involves orbs and missing time. So it was about 1988 or 89. I was 17 or 18 years old, still in high school. And where we lived at, it was a very small town. And on this particular night, I was leaving a friend's house. It had to be before midnight because of my curfew. And I have to take the one main paved road. And on both sides, it's all farms and cornfields. And I'd driven this many, many times. And as I'm approaching this farmhouse, there's a light above the barn. And at first, I thought it was the guy installed one of the big fluorescent-type lights that you'll see out at farms. And as I got closer to it, I could see that it wasn't really a light, so I had slowed way down almost to a crawl. And I swear it's moving very, very slowly, parallel with me, but in the opposite direction. And it does. It's over the barn, and now it's in between the gap between the house and the barn. And I'm just baffled at what this could be. So I lean over, roll down the passenger window to see if any sound. Nothing. I got just dead silence. And as it's moving, I can't crane my neck anymore. I put the car in reverse, and I'm kind of backing up and following it. And the odd thing is it was glowing, but there was no ambient light around it. Like, it wasn't lighting up the ground. It wasn't anything like that. And all of a sudden it flashed, it just gets super bright, and I turn my head and I can see the shadow of my car, and I mean it was like daylight for a split second. And when I turn my head back, it's across the cornfield, and at this point it's got to be well over a mile, and it's a little dot, and it just soup, and it just disappears. And I'm completely freaked out. So I turn around and I go all the way back to my friend's house. And I'll remember, we're high school kids. So I'm knocking on the door thinking it was just 5 minutes later. And my friend comes to the door and he's, Sean, what are you doing? I'm like, and I start telling him the story. And he's like, dude, it's like 2:30 in the morning. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, my parents say, you know, pissed off, saw you through the window. And I'm like, this just happened 5-10 minutes ago down the street, but it's 2:30 in the morning. So needless to say, next day, and I don't remember if I got any trouble or anything, but I'm so curious, I go back to that road and to that farmhouse, and I knock on the door and I ask the people there if they had seen anything, any light, anything that night. And they said no. Don't know what it was, It definitely wasn't a helicopter. I mean, it was dead silent. And what happened to those 2 to 2.5 hours? I have absolutely no idea. I've told this story for many, many years. Well, I appreciate your show, and thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Sean, for calling in. Well, Shannon, missing time, a strange orb in the sky, aliens, right? This has to be aliens.
Absolutely. I can just see Giorgio right now with his hands up and his hair standing on end saying, aliens. Yes, of
I'm
course.
Not no, saying I mean, it's aliens, but...
I'm not saying, but obviously it's aliens. So, I mean, this one for me, the second that there is a... And to me, this is a substantial amount of missing time. I think that all of us have heard, you know, 5 minutes, 10 mm-hmm. minutes, 20... Once you get upwards of, you know, 2.5, 3 hours, I, back then, you know, 88, 89, of course, it wasn't quite the lexicon of discussing these types of things. And at that age, I don't think he would be aware. But today, if that happened to me, I'd be like, I'm finding somebody that I trust to look over every inch of my body to see what is implanted in me.
Where is it? Yeah.
Yeah. And I need x-rays stat. And I mean, that's where your mind would go, is to a very, very dark place with this missing time. But, you know, the way that it was kind of, it flashed very brightly at one point reminds me of what they do on purpose out at Trout Lake, Washington in the Isetti Ranch, and they kind of have the craft do those power-ups, I think they call them. You know, they kind of will the craft or put a request in. I don't know the proper verbiage.
I think request is a good word. That seems to jive with what I've heard. You know, they ask it to appear.
Right, yeah. It's kind of this put it in out there in the ether very politely, like, hey, like, we're here if you want to kind of show off. You know, and they do. They seem to actually go, oh, yeah, you asked for this. I will give you kind of this power up. And it essentially does brighten up. And then they will go back to either their original brightness or they'll just be gone, I think, after that. So I don't know why that just that flash made that flash in my mind is what's going on at the East City Ranch.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you mentioned that. What was this, 1989? Is that what you said? I already forget.
But. Yeah, I think he said 88, 89.
So back then, the only missing time I ever would have heard of, I was also like 10 years old, but the last time the first time I ever heard of missing time was Unsolved Mysteries. And there was a story about a gentleman riding, he was a military guy on leave or something. He was riding a bus somewhere in New England. So he gets off the bus, calls on a payphone the guy that's supposed to pick him up. He's like, hey, I'm at the bus stop. Come get me. The guy shows up and this dude's nowhere to be found. He looks around for like an hour, waits for him. And finally, he's like, he's not here. I'm leaving. So he goes back. And then a few minutes later, the guy calls again. He's like, hey, you know, where are you at? It's been 10 minutes. I still haven't seen you. You said you'd be here in 2 or 3 minutes. And the guy's like, hey, I was there like an hour ago. And I waited for an hour. You did not show up. You weren't there. So to the guy on the bus, it was 10 minutes. To the guy picking him up, it was several hours. And man, did that stick with me. When I was a kid, that terrified the hell out of me. And plus, they had the gray aliens, and it was one of the first times I saw an image of the gray aliens. They were talking about Whitley Strieber's book, I believe, at the time. So all that to say, what is the deal with this missing time phenomena? What makes it so scary? People really seem to react to that. I get it a lot in my Mirrored Men stories that I've been sharing over the years. There's a lot of missing time there, and it really seems to terrify people. What is your theory as to why that is?
I mean, it goes back to just the whole reason why you and I loved to do our shows. It's this whole aspect of the unknown, except that's on a whole different, such a personal...
Personal
and terrifying level. And I know that I don't know how many people have said in their phone calls to you or people that you've spoken to. I know that I have on my show. Okay, so you have this missing time. You don't have any idea what happened during this occurrence. Do you want to try to find out what actually did occur? You know, would you take the next step to go under hypnosis or, you know, find a very reputable practitioner to try to dig any information out? And I would say it's probably it's close to 50-50, as I'm willing to, you know, give a number. of people that go, oh, heck to the no. I never want to know. I don't have any ill effects from what I can tell, right? Like, I don't, this is not an ongoing thing where, you know, I'm being floated through walls or something like that. If it was a one-time occurrence, which I'm assuming from what Sean has said, because this is back 88, 89, he didn't say, oh, this was a start of a lifetime full of experiences. You know what I mean? So for those kinds of people, I think they're more willing to go, well, I think I need to find out what's going on during these occurrences, because I still to this day am having what I'm thinking or sleep paralysis or nightmares. But then I actually have some kind of physical, I mean, remnants the next day. Some of these folks have, you know.
Yeah. The regressive therapy is a bit of a triple-edged sword for me, because one, yeah, maybe you don't want to know. Maybe you don't want to find out exactly what's been going on. The truth a lot of times is scarier than, you know, just being oblivious. And the other thing is, it's that method has really been attacked, I guess, over the past decade or so. Its credibility. There's been arguments that the psychiatrist that's administering the hypnosis is actually leaving suggestions in there or planting suggestions. And so you hear a lot of that stuff. But also at the same time, the government does all sorts of things to like try to undercut some of these paranormal theories that we have out there. I mean, plenty of times misinformation has been used to kind of throw us off the trail. And is this another example of that? You know, is there something to this? And the government's simply out there saying, oh, this is fake for these reasons, and just basically discrediting everybody that practices it. So for me, you know, the waters are muddied enough that I'm questionable as to how effective this procedure actually is.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that. That is 100%. And, you know, even when we're just sleeping a normal sleep in our own beds. I mean, I have some really crazy nutty dreams, and I don't wake up going, oh, I that means something every single time I dream. No, I don't think that it does. I think that our brains do wackadoo things when we're asleep. And I would hazard to say that if you're under hypnosis, and as you say, if you had a practitioner that was maybe even not on purpose, planting or leading you down some kind of a road, I mean, how could that affect your mental health long term? If you're then filling in gaps, or they're helping you fill in gaps unknowingly, I mean, heaven forbid you don't remember. You should have stayed in the not remember zone at that point.
Yeah, it's safer there, probably.
Absolutely.
But, you know, to play devil's advocate here, I've heard plenty of stories where people claimed they were abducted and they tried the regressive therapy and got results. You know, they were able to tell parts of their story. And to back all this up, they have those implants in their body, you know, those foreign objects that sort of tie this whole thing together. Every time I'm full of doubt, one of those stories pops up. I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe I'm not so certain now.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, wasn't it Whitley Strieber had some that would react to you know, you'd hold a radio up to it or something.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The radio would have static, or I don't remember the exact details of that, but these things, they have been out there. Dr. Lear has pulled stuff out of people that was reactive or would change when it would come out of a human body, which you're going, well, how do you even explain that?
Yeah, or disappear altogether. And yeah. I've also seen where they had the forceps like inside the muscle trying to remove it, and the object would run from the forceps. They could chase it with the x-ray.
You know, that right there, even just you just saying that gives me chills. And
it's
every
terrifying.
Single time I've heard of something like that, I'm like, that is such a huge bag of nope. I can't even, I'd be like, take it, just chop the whole arm off. I don't even
care. Just take the whole arm. We don't need
get,
that.
Get it.
Just burn it.
Calling your friends.
Well, from one scary subject to another, let's segue into Mason's entry from your state of Nevada.
So, my name's Mason. This happened in Las Vegas. I want to just say this. I don't have the recording or anything, but the thing I seen was a shadow person at my work. And what happened was, it was like around midnight, around 12 or 1 a.m. It was night, and basically I was opening the gate so my dad could take out trash. So I opened it so I could help him take a cart for the trash to this trash can. And basically, I seen a shadow person. It was between these two cars. And I went to go check, and it wasn't there anymore. Because before I walked over there, I seen it walk through the wall. And I basically told my mom about it. And she said that how there was a person that used to work at this car dealership. And she said that he loved working there so much that his spirit's there. And my mom said that he like died from a heart attack or something like that. Then, that's all. Thank you. I like to listen to your podcast while I work. You are a very good person, and I hope you have a good day.
Yeah, I like this one. So I would assume, because he says it was standing in between two cars, my brain automatically assumed that it still was a car dealership. Doesn't mean that it was. Could have just been two cars parked at another,
sure,
you know, an office building, or goodness knows what it could be now. But, you know, it just goes to the idea that if there is an emotional tie to a location, and, you know, we don't have Mason on the phone, or his, I think it was his mother who said, you know, I have this story about why you may have seen this person, what we're assuming is a person, you know, did this person actually die there, or did they actually really love to work at the car dealership so much that they wanted to go back? And God bless the guy selling cars that loves his job that much. We need more car salesmen like that, you know.
We just need more people like that in general, I think. Yeah,
that's true. That's very true. But, you know, and then if it is still a car dealership, and if they tore it down, would it be much like a haunted house that, hey, if you're going to remodel or change this, not only am I not going to go away, I'm going to get ticked off, and yeah, things are going to start to go down.
We're going to escalate the activity here.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, you have a shadow man encounter, right, that took place in, I want to say, Utah.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll just, from my memory, tell your story really fast. You were riding an ATV through the wilds of Utah somewhere, and you saw these shadow entities running parallel with you. Is that the brunt of it?
Absolutely, 100%.
So when you listen to Mason's description of this entity and compare it to what you saw, how similar are the two? Do you think this may be a similar phenomena or something completely different?
You know, and I think that we're going to cover this coming up. There are other shadow entities or shadow figures, whatever you want to call them, shadow people, that have very different dimensions and measurements. And my shadow people were quite, quote unquote, normal compared to a 6 foot tall human being. They didn't have super long arms or a long neck or any kind of strange things, except for the fact that they just were this black as night cutout, and they were running and paralleling me through the woods.
Terrifying.
Yeah. But I've, you know, as you probably, everyone's going to roll their eyes, they've heard me say it a million times, but if they had interacted with me, the experience for me would have taken on a whole nother meaning, I'm sure. And I would, it was just something that I glimpsed, and it was kind of like watching this really weird movie, I guess is the best way to say it, because there was no interaction. I don't even know if they were aware of me. I don't know. But yeah, if they had interacted with, even one of them had turned or did whatever, waved or something, I think it would have been a very different experience for me. And I feel like for Mason's experience, it was standing in between the two cars, then eventually went into a wall. That's pretty interactive. And I feel like that shadow figure, shadow person kind of realized, oh, he sees me, time to boogie on out of here. So that was pretty interactive on his part. So I feel like not only the shape and size of the shadow people, but also the level of interaction for me is always where I gauge it as far as my own experience.
And, you know, that little detail of it walking into the wall, I can't help but think ghost in that scenario. You know, the wall wasn't there when this person was alive, and so now it appears he's walking right through it. But why all black? You know, why would it appear, you know, as a shadow person, unless, you know, perhaps that's what shadow people are? I mean, we honestly don't have a clue. So maybe they are ghosts, spirits, or, you know, whatever. And it's just the manifestation that they take.
Maybe he was one of the cliche bad car salesmen, the vultures. And, you know, when he came back, he just had to be in all black. You know, he's like the gunslinger or something.
The ultimate punishment. Yeah. Well, before we move on to our next call, something happened in Vegas, which is where you reside. I think it was last fall, late last summer, the Vegas aliens. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. I'm sure everybody knows what I'm talking about. This family saw, well, a lot of people actually saw a light shoot across the sky in Vegas and it sort of crash landed in somebody's backyard who called 911. The cops came out several times. A huge story. I won't go into all that. I just want to get your personal opinion on that story. What the hell happened in Vegas that day? What do you think took place, Shannon?
I think it was a combo of a natural atmospheric event coupled with, I'm not going to outright say that they were hoaxing, but there was so many different things coming out about shoe drag marks that could be matched to sneakers, you know, for where this quote unquote craft landed. And there was an awful AI or CGI, doesn't matter now, can't even tell. It's also good of, you know, this quote unquote alien crouching down
A
fence line. And that wasn't, if that was an actual photo with that placed in there, I'm going, that's not even Las Vegas. It's just all these weird trees that we don't.
A little
even
bit
have
of research.
Here.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the little bit of research that I did on that particular video told me that it was filmed before all the alien stuff took place in a different location, and it was probably CGI. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
Or AI at this point. Who knows the difference? But in my opinion, those two videos aren't connected. They're only connected through social media. People, you know, falsely claiming that that was footage of it. And there were a few things that took place in this, the initial alien encounter that gave me pause. One was the fact that they called 911, which is a crime to, you know, falsely report a crime to the police. So they could get in trouble for that, for starters. So that's unnecessary attention that you're bringing to yourself just for a gag, I guess. It doesn't really seem worth it. And the other thing is, this was all over the news at a certain point. The Vegas police actually came back and installed a ton of cameras on this house. There was a whole array that they put up with all these measurement tools and cameras and listening devices. And it was something, you know, straight out of a film. It was pretty complicated what they put up there. I don't know why they would do that if this was just a hoax, I guess, in this situation that we're making up. I don't know why they would go through all that trouble.
That is a good point. And actually, now that you say that, I don't recall them really ever going, well, hey, here's the Twitter account for me, or here's the YouTube channel that we have, or so you're right. I don't really quite know what they would really, at the end of the day, get out of that unless it just enjoy that kind of strange attention. But you're right, I think the biggest thing would be it would be extremely ballsy to call 911. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially considering it's something like that, all aliens in the backyard. What I mean,
good luck proving that. You know, you're committing a crime by falsely reporting something, and then what you're reporting is so outlandish that you're never going to convince anybody that it's real. So you're setting yourself up behind the eight ball to begin with.
and Metro is a little bit busy, so I would imagine that by the time, you know, they get out there, and if there was extra evidence that this had actually gone on that maybe they couldn't or thought that they shouldn't release, it's really a bummer, because that definitely was a sensational story. But yeah, it's just like that. Oh my gosh, every few years it comes up. It's a photo taken through, and folks, if you're going to take a photo of something, don't do it through a pane of glass. Yeah, it's going to show some weird stuff. Can I just say that right now? Yeah, there's going to be faces and pareidolia galore. But there's a picture of a mothership that comes out every few years, and it's a lampshade because the person has taken a photo through a pane of glass out, you know, to show this picture window and the outdoors, and it's a lamp behind the guy or gal.
You see that a lot. Can lights as well, like recessed lights up into the ceiling. You see that same photo too, so it looks like four spotlights or a triangle or something like that. Yeah, that's something you see often.
Yeah, I'm sure that it's about time for that photo to resurface once again, and for my eyes to roll so hard. Yeah, and so what I was mentioning about the, I mean, it looks like something right out of Signs, is that creature crouched down by that fence line. But it is unfortunate that got attached to it, because for a while I was bamboozled into thinking that this was, in fact, trying to get attached from the family to their story. And I'm going, well, that's not even Las Vegas. I can tell that right now.
Yeah.
This fence line that you placed this fake alien into. So then I kind of started to just disassociate and not even look into the rest of that story. So there's probably even aspects that I'm missing. But your point is, I think the most poignant is to call 911 is a very big deal.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times I notice this happens where something like the Vegas alien will take place. It's huge. It's all over the news. And a handful of people, and I don't even know their names. I don't know who these people are. They're like, oh, this is fake because we found this video, or it's fake because the guy admitted it. Well, I've never seen anywhere where the people admitted it was fake. I never saw anything, you know, really that convinced me that it wasn't real. Quite frankly, I mean, I'm not saying there were aliens in Vegas, but I haven't seen the evidence from that side that proves that it's not real. And I know it's impossible to prove a negative or whatever, but you know, if this person did come out and admit that it's a hoax, where's that video? You know, where is that dialogue? It's something I've never seen. And I feel like things get dismissed that way very easily and very often. Like any new Bigfoot video comes out, like, oh, somebody said that's fake, and that's all anybody needs to hear. Like, oh, somebody said that, let's move on. And suddenly that video just disappears.
And they've never been interviewed, right? I mean, if anyone's going to do it, it should have been George Knapp. You know, he's here in Vegas with me, and I'm feeling like if you should talk to anybody, it should be George. And I'll bet that he tried his darndest to get
them on. He was involved, sure. I don't know if he got to speak to the witnesses on camera. I think maybe he interviewed them on his own, but I don't know about I haven't followed this story in a while. You're in Vegas, so it's a rare opportunity to ask somebody that's actually, you know, on ground zero there to what their opinion is.
I'm the worst. I actually am the same boat. I haven't even thought about that in a little while. I should, and now that you say that, I should probably look some of that up and see if there's been any new developments or if maybe they did talk to someone. Although I feel like either one of us would have probably seen that online.
Yeah. Sounds like an opportunity for a remote broadcast, Shannon.
Heck yeah. Like, you can trust me. I mean, I want to hang out with some aliens and whatever's on your property, calling to them. Let's do this thing. Let's have a repeat sesh.
Well, I'm only 3 hours away, so if you find something, let me know.
I mean, another triangle. Here we go.
Here we are. Well, I got some more stories to share, but first, another word from our sponsors.
Beat wind bikes.
Watch sales.
Welcome back, folks. I have with me Shannon LeGros, and we're going to dive into yet another story here. This one comes to us from the state of Illinois, and this one probably is aliens, let's be honest. Alexander, welcome to the program.
Hey, Derek. This is Alexander from Rockford. Just listened to the episode release on Friday, May 5th, and wanted to call in about an extremely similar experience I had to the caller. From North Carolina, who witnessed some triangular UFO phenomena with his mom. About a little over 10 years ago, my grandpa and I had gone out to dinner. We were coming back to his house and we're having a conversation in the car in the driveway. We both got out of the car and my grandpa told me, hey, look up in the sky, do you see that? And I looked up, and there was a strange triangular formation of lights that were glowing in color, a warmer color, so they differentiated themselves from the stars, and they're also slightly moving. My grandpa is an engineer, knows a bunch about aviation, all sorts of aircraft, and he didn't recognize it as anything that would be normally in our skies, and it just looked, I mean, phenomenal. We were both amazed. So at each point of the triangle was a different orb, and as we watched, one of the orbs would disappear, and then from the horizon at an insane speed, another orb of light would come fill the orb that had disappeared in the exact location it had disappeared at. This happened in a clockwise formation. I was honestly amazed and a little scared. I went inside to where my grandma and my aunt were, hanging out, sitting on the couch, and I wanted to turn on the TV. I thought that this would be on the news. And when I went to turn on the TV, they had satellite at the time, and the satellite wasn't working. All the TV channels were fuzzy, which would only be normal if there was bad weather. So I was really shocked by this, and I ran outside to tell my grandpa what was going on with the TV. When I went up to look back up at the sky, the triangular orbs had disappeared. He said that all three of the lights disappeared at once and went away. So it was a really interesting experience that we had. We definitely believe that there is something else out there and we aren't alone, and just had to call in after hearing the other listeners' experience in North Carolina. It was extremely similar to what we saw that night. Thanks for the show, Derek. Keep it up.
Thank you, Alexander, for sharing. All right, Shannon, black triangles. Now, as far as phenomena is concerned, this is the phenomena that's reported the most on my show, I think, aside from just your standard ghost story, which, you know, there are dozens and dozens of those. But this is the most popular UFO by a long shot, you know, the shape and description of. What the hell are these things? They're reported all over the place. They don't seem to be limited to any geographical region. They're even reported in, like, Europe and stuff. So do you have a theory as to what these things might be?
I am going to play devil's advocate in the way that I get pretty jaded when it comes to UFOs, especially triangle UFOs. And this was even before I reconnected with my stepbrother. He still lives here in town. And he, at one point, was actually headed out to Area 51, and he saw a black triangle, and it was right over his car, so low that he could see the lights underneath. And he said it looked like the aliens went to Home Depot and picked up those lights that were underneath that craft. And we actually talked to him for On the Trail UFOs, by the way. But I am of the belief that, well, I don't know, I'm the worst at throwing out arbitrary numbers because they're arbitrary. So 80-85%, maybe more, of especially the triangle craft are going to be ours, period. Mm-hmm. That's just where I fall. I don't find them particularly fascinating or interesting unless they do something really pretty cool, which honestly, Alexander's did. And it caught my attention because it had this whole, one of the lights leaves and then another one fills the gap where that light left. And it did it in a clockwise fashion. Now, I don't know why Air Force pilots and the people that run these programs would go, this would be kind of a good thing for this aircraft to do. That for me, I'm kind of going, well, that's cool, because I don't know why we would have a need for an aircraft to do such a thing. Unless, you know, he didn't realize that it actually wasn't one thing. Maybe it was, you know, different things depending on all kinds of conditions, lighting, distance, a person's eyesight, right? Their perception of this thing. So that's definitely where I fall. But the caveat is, of course, there are these other stories where I go, okay, I know that there's definitely other things out there. The reason that I get jaded about UFOs is because I'm 100% in the camp that there are other beings and entities far, far away, and they have a much better grasp on physics and things like that than we do, and they probably can actually travel the way that they, Sam Neill explained in Event Horizon. He's like, you know, we have to travel point A to point B, but they just fold the paper and go right through the whole dang thing. Remember that scene from Event Horizon? Yeah, the wormhole essentially is what he's talking about. And we haven't mastered that. It doesn't mean that other things have not, or other people have not. So
very true.
We're a little full of ourselves in that way. You know what I mean? Because we can't grasp that, oh, we maybe are not the smartest thing in the entire universe, which is so massive we can't even comprehend it. Anyway, woo, getting off track. Yes, but also the fact that the TV channel, which is, as he says, it was regulated and ran off of a satellite. It was just totally out. So if it affected the electronics, you know, in the area.
Or blocked the signal. I mean, anybody that's had one of those little satellites in a rainstorm knows that those things don't work when there's any kind of weather. So if there is a giant triangle up there, it could have easily just blocked out the signal for this particular satellite.
You know, and how much of that is some kind of a psyop to where maybe it was one of our craft and they wanted to see, let's go out. And I can't recall how far out they are, if they were rural or not. But if they're looking to see, well, how many folks are going to report this? We're going to monitor the news stations. Mm-hmm. We're going to monitor whatever the online chatter might be about this kind of a thing. I do think that there is that aspect too.
What can we get away with? Yeah.
Yeah. The government has been there, done that. That's proven. You've already brought that up. You know, they have done tests and some pretty horrible tests just for those sorts of purposes. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this? Because this one does have the very unique aspect of this. A light leaves, a light comes and fills the gap.
Yeah. You know, when I hear details like that, well, let me back up actually and first say that most of the Black Triangle stories I hear involve the craft. They first see it in the distance. It's just a bright light in the distance. And within seconds, it's on top of them and kind of hovers there silently for a long time, which we, as far as I know, we don't have the technology to do either of those things. And then it just suddenly takes off like something out of Star Wars, you know, light speed instantly and just gone from the horizon. So that behavior right there, I struggle to think military because of those maneuvers. As far as I know, we don't have anything that can do that kind of movement, I guess. That said, who knows what the military has? I mean, they're 10, 20 years ahead of, you know, the private sector as far as technology is concerned. So perhaps they do have the technology to do exactly that. And there are, of course, rumblings of the TR-3B. I guess it's a experimental government blimp of some sort, like high-speed blimp, that there's rumblings of it online. I've never seen an image of it that I thought was real or anything like that, but it does fit the description. And there are patents out there that are they're supposed to be real. I don't know if they actually are or not, but you can find them on Google if you search for them. So to answer your question, I honestly have no idea, but I can tell you this, whatever it is, it's real. I'm convinced that there's just too many people that have seen this thing, too many people that have reported it to my show alone, let alone everybody else's programs. It tells me there's something out there. These people are seeing something. And I know people personally that have seen these things. And, you know, I believe what they're telling me. I mean, they have no reason to make this story up that also matches everybody else's story. Whatever it is, it's physical. It's actually out there. Where it comes from, your guess is as good as mine.
Well, of course. And then you've got the added bonus of some people, when they see crafts like this, then have the missing time, which then automatically my mind goes to something off planet. But then there are those that say it's all ours, all of it is ours, and that they are simply like the cattle mutilations and things is even us, and that it is all for experimental purposes. That's goodness
believable.
Only knows. And it could be, you know, it could be a little pull from here and a pull from there, and I think that's really what we're dealing with is it's a little bit of all of what we've talked about.
Yeah, something else I've thought about for a long time as far as these UFOs are concerned is, what if they're us from the future? You know, if they found a way to come back and they know they can't really interact with us, they'll screw up the timeline or whatever. I'm not a physicist. I don't know how time works. But I've seen enough movies to know if you go back in time and start messing with the timeline, crazy things happen in the future. So if there was, you know, a future civilization that's back visiting us, trying to stay undetected is probably the best way to do that. So I can't help but, you know, have that in the back of my mind when I hear these stories.
Yeah, I kind of like that explanation. And forgive me for everyone who's just never heard me before. I do a lot of movie references. So what you just said reminds me of Alien Resurrection, where they're showing all the mess ups, essentially, of creating Ripley. And, you know, maybe that's what they're coming here to do, is take samples of what not to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, what is that? I mean, and why? Because I have talked to people. Not everybody forgets everything. Did they screw up? Did they just, they allow little bits and pieces sometimes? It's not always
just
missing
sloppy
time,
yeah.
And they don't remember. Yeah, I'm like, well, Randy over here is getting fired because Bill can remember an hour of 3 hours of missing time, and it's not good.
You know, you start dissecting all this stuff and really digging into it, and it just brings up more questions than it ever can answers. And it's, if you allow it, it's very frustrating. So that's my way of saying so I don't have a clue, Shannon. I don't know.
That is the biggest takeaway here, guys, is we have no idea.
But I'm a big enough person to say that I don't know. There's a lot of people out there that they know definitely what's going on, and trust me, they don't. They don't know either.
Hey, we're lucky we know these experts, you know? We can always call them if we need them.
Yeah, they can give us the input that we're missing.
That's right.
Listen, Kim, building the team with
Cusco. Have our children good the...
Well, Shannon, I have one more, and then we're going to dip into the beyond, which is the Patreon version of the show. But first, you got a new documentary coming out. We don't know when yet, but sometime soon, where you're covering the Dog Man. And am I allowed to say that it's in the Lone Star State?
Actually, the first one is in the Lone Star State. The Dog Man territory, Werewolves in the Land Between the Lakes, is set in, of course, Land Between the Lakes area. And we just filmed that a few months back. And it is in tandem with a book that is releasing from Aaron Deese, who is my co-host from both of these documentaries. And that book is actually coming out April 23rd, and that's called Hunting Grounds, Dogmen of the Lakes.
Oh, you got to go check that out. That's a book I'll be getting for sure. I screwed up then. I'll be honest. I had all kinds of Missouri dogmen stories that I could have shared, and I picked something
That's
completely
all right.
different. But
I have it all written down because the names of the books are different than the names of the docs, and I, you know, timelines are askew. But yeah, no, that's okay. Yeah, the Texas Dogman Triangle was Aaron's first book, and then the Dogman Triangle, Werewolves in the Lone Star State, was our first werewolf/dogman documentary that's already out.
And that's a fun documentary. It's got, if you name a paranormal celebrity, they're in that documentary, I think. It's like the Expendables for cryptid researchers, I guess. So anyway, we're going to play a Dogman call. It's not from Texas or the Land Between the Lakes. It's actually from West Virginia. But this is a call that I shared all the way back in Season 12, Episode 7. And it got a lot of attention back then because the person that's submitting it isn't the type of person you would expect to call in about a werewolf or a dog man. So let's play this call and we'll circle back and talk about it here in a second. Robin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Derek. My name is Robin and I am calling you from Florida, but this incident that happened actually happened in West Virginia. So back in 2008, my husband and I decided to take my then 4-year-old son and my mom on a quick snow skiing trip to Snowshoe, West Virginia, the week between Christmas and New Year's. And we decided that we really didn't want to drive all that way, so we decided to fly into Charleston, West Virginia, and rent a car and then drive over to Snowshoe. So we landed in Charleston, and we loaded up the car and started on our way over to Snowshoe. And by this time on that particular day, it was about 5:30 or 6 p.m., so it started to get pretty dark. And the way over there is pretty much two-lane highway for the majority of the ride. And obviously, it's very windy and hilly and gets more mountainous as you get closer to Snowshoe. So we were only about 30 to 45 minutes into the trip, kind of starting to wind through. And my mom and my son had fallen asleep. They were completely worn out. So my husband was driving and I was riding shotgun. And we get to this one particular hill and we're going up the incline. And at the very top of the hill was kind of a rock cut area where they blast through the rock in order to complete the highway. And I really don't know what those are called, the correct terminology, because we don't have those in Florida. So anyway, rock cut area. So our headlights landed on something on the left-hand edge of this little rock cliff. I'm going to say the cliff was about, on either side, they were probably both about 20 to 25 feet high. Not too high. But our headlights landed on this thing, this strange thing, sitting, perching on the edge of the cliff. And as we got closer, it looked like a giant dog. It definitely had dog-like features. I mean, we could see it in profile. So, you know, it had kind of a dog's muzzle and it had pointy ears, but this thing was huge. And by huge, I mean, I'm 5'4", so I'm not tall by any stretch of the imagination, but this thing was in a seated position at the edge of this cliff. And I would guess that it would have been eye to eye with me. So it was pretty big for a seated dog. Also, it was super muscular. I mean, this thing had giant muscles. They were really defined and totally bizarre. And as we got closer and closer to it, probably only about 60 feet away, this thing went from its seated position with no momentum and completely leapt across the entire two-lane highway, complete with emergency lanes on either side of the regular lanes, and galloped off into the trees on the other side of the road, of the cliff. And it was the most incredible thing we've ever seen. It made absolutely no sense to us whatsoever. This highway had two standard lanes, then again, the smaller emergency lanes on either side, and then this rock cut area was kind of sloped, and so it, of course, it's going to be wider at the top. And so my husband and I are thinking, like, this thing leapt at least 40 feet from a seated position before it galloped off into the, and I say gallop only because it's really the best way to describe its running motion. While it was in the air, I know that sounds crazy, but when it was like right in front of our car and over our car and in the air, you could see the defined muscles even better. And it had this really small waist with muscular hind legs, but the upper body was much bigger and bulkier than the rest of the animal or thing. And it almost looked like it had shoulders. It really looked a lot like a gargoyle, honestly. Very strange. I don't remember the tail. I know it had a tail, but it wasn't all that remarkable. So I don't remember too many details about it, but I do remember there being, you know, a medium-sized tail. But anyway, it was so bizarre. My husband and I looked at each other and simultaneously we said, "What the was that?" And we still say that, you know, 12 years later. Anyway, after Googling and just kind of like doing a little research, the only thing that he and I can agree on that it looks like is a dog man, which I can't even believe I'm saying that out loud, but it does look like illustrations of a dog man. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen to this date. Hopefully it's the craziest thing I will ever see. We did talk about on the rest of our trip, though, how when we landed in Charleston, West Virginia, that's really only about an hour away from Point Pleasant, where all of the crazy Mothman sightings were and the bridge collapse and everything that happened back in the day. But very strange area. We figured you were probably the perfect person to share this with, that hopefully you could give us some ideas if you know what this could be or if you've heard of any other stories of anything crazy like this. And keep up the good work and can't wait for the next episode. Take care. Thanks.
Robin, thank you so much for calling in. Whew. Okay, Shannon, a dog man in ski country in West Virginia. Just give me your thoughts. I mean, you've spent a lot of time researching Dogman. You've done now two documentaries on it. What do you think of Robin's entry here?
I mean, this, I love this call because you can tell that Robin is just plain old stumped with what she and her husband saw. And I'm sure that she wishes that, I think, you know, the other two folks in the back were not asleep and that they had more eyes on this thing. Maybe not, though, because do you really want your kids to see this? Probably not. But, you know, the 40-foot leap off of the cliff and the explosive movements, and I love this because it's essentially looking like what she said it was doing in the beginning. She said it was crouched down, and then she said it was like its upper body looked very gargoyle-like. I would assume she meant just muscular, you know, upper body, stuff like that. And then it just explodes off of this cliff and crosses the road. And this is the ideal way to see a dog man. Can I just go ahead and say that?
True.
Because these are not the kind of things, like a Bigfoot will come in, and for the most part, not 100% of the time, we've heard those stories. For the most part, Bigfoot comes in, they just want to look at you. They're just little creepers. Dog man, though, will get in your face. He's ticked off you're there. He's ticked off you're even in his space breathing. So this is the ideal way to see a dog man. And I would like to love to be in Robin or her husband's shoes in a heartbeat. And especially when she said, she said she didn't say it galloped on all fours, but I would imagine that's what she meant. And, you know, stuff like that really lends credibility to a sighting for me, because if something like that, that can walk bipedally, jumps off of a cliff and is galloping across a road, it's going to be on all fours, especially if it's trying to just get out of the lights of in the way of this car coming at it. And yeah, I love this sighting. It's ideal for a Dogman sighting,
yeah,
to be in a vehicle.
The safest way to see one away. Of these things.
Yes. Yes. And then she had enough of a description to where she's going, well, I didn't know at the time quite what it was, but then I came across, you know, she's like, boom, confirmation, Dogman. Oh my goodness. That's what we saw. And yeah, I love this call. I'm a little jealous of this one. I would love to see a Dogman in this way and be close enough to have that confirmation. I don't know how it affected their snowshoe trip. I would love to ask her, right? Like, I bet you made sure you were in before dark. And
good luck
near
skiing,
the cabin.
Knowing that thing's out there, right?
Seriously.
That'll,
I mean,
keep you on the bunny slopes for sure.
That's where it's like, Robin, let's hear the update. Like, didn't that affect the trip a little bit?
Well, Robin, if you're listening, call in and let us know how you felt afterward, and I'll be sure to share that. You know, she included a detail in there that I didn't catch until just now, but she talked about the creature crouching down when she initially saw it. And I was thinking back to a lot of the other Dogman stories that I've heard over the years, and a lot of them start that very way. Like, they come across the creature crouching down, and then it stands up, and they're like, oh, gee, this thing's way bigger than I thought it was. I wonder what's going on with that. Why would it be crouching down like that? Is that some sort of way for it to stay undetected or look unassuming? You know, there's got to be something there.
See, that's what I was doing in Salt Fork. I was just waiting to explode 40 feet away and just be out of the situation. Yeah, no, I would hazard to say, building upon what you just said, that's interesting because, you know, in a lot of these Dogman encounters, if someone is unlucky enough to be outside of a vehicle and close enough to hear it stand up, a lot of times you have this joint popping sound.
Oh, yeah.
Which always creeps me right out. It's amazing. I don't envy those folks, but yeah, I would hazard to say that's exactly what it is, you know, because look at the distance that it covered in a very short amount of time, going from that crouched position and just exploding then across the road and galloping away on all fours. So I would hazard to say that it was probably, as you said in the beginning too, maybe just trying to go undetected. Mm-hmm. And then it thought, well, maybe they're too close. We don't know the exact angle of things when they're driving or anything like that, but it probably was, and just thought, you know what, now I'm just gonna bounce on up out of here, and it sure did.
Or eating roadkill. You know, I've heard about that. The Bray Road beast was reported to eat some sort of, it was crouching down by the road and was eating like a dead raccoon or something. One of the very first sightings of that creature. So maybe there was some sort of roadkill element to the sighting as well, that, you know, it was feeding
point.
Or something.
Yeah, that is a very good point. And, you know, that does make you wonder, because we haven't heard a lot about their hunting activity, let's say, being captured or seen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, are they more opportunistic, or, I mean, considering their athletic ability, as it were, from these descriptions, it doesn't sound like they have to be very opportunistic. I think they could take out whatever in the world they wanted to.
Yeah, but if they're intelligent, they may know that they'll draw less attention if they're feeding that way. You know, if they're aware of themselves, aware of their surroundings, and want to stay undetected, the best way to do that is not to pick off a pig from a farm or something and draw attention to yourself. Instead, oh, there's a dead squirrel. Let's go munch on that dead squirrel instead. I may be overthinking that, but...
No, I think you're spot on with that. And I would hazard to say that most Bigfoot, and I'm not trying to compare the two, but they're big, hairy, terrifying things in the woods sometimes, and they're close enough to each other to talk about. But I would hazard to say that most Bigfoot realize that very same thing. I mean, you don't hear of, well, we don't hear of them because they're gone. No, I'm just kidding. they could take them, you know, people. That's it's a well-worn subject that we've all discussed, but I, you know, you're not hearing or seeing, I saw a Bigfoot snatch a guy off a trail right in front of me. You don't hear that story every day. And so they know, they also know, you take one hairless thing a whole lot of hairless things than come and make my life H-E double hockey sticks.
Yeah. Well, you hear it go the other way around, too. You hear plenty of stories. The siege at Hanobia is something that comes to mind, where one of these things was shot, or shot at, one of those two, and the rest of the big feet in the area sort of retaliated and
right.
unleashed hell on this house. They threw rocks at it and all sorts of things. The validity of that story, I don't know. I mean, I'm not too familiar with it, so maybe that's been debunked since now, but it still reminded me, you know, of what you were talking about there. I got one more question for you in regards to Dogman, and then we're going to dip out of here and go to the beyond, Shannon. West Virginia, this is the only Dogman story outside of Mountain Monsters, the TV show. I think they have a Dogman every couple of weeks. Outside of that, I've never heard of any other Dogman werewolf sort of encounters from the state of West Virginia. Having studied them, you know, you've done two documentaries now. Have you heard of anything in that area? And if so, you know, what's the deal?
I will not recall specifics. I probably should have looked that up. I want to say that I've even had somebody on ITF for the West Virginia Dogman, but I could
it all
be completely
blurs together
wrong.
After a while, doesn't it?
It sure does. And you know, if my brain could work optimally, I would have such a great reference point right here, but I don't. No, but there are actually plenty outside of TV shows and things like that of activity from both large, you know, Bigfoot, large Dogman in West Virginia. That's one of my favorite states to go to do just about anything. It's not fun if you get carsick. It's very windy, hilly, and you want to be shotgun. You want to call shotgun in West Virginia. I'll tell you that right now. But yeah, no, there's definitely Dogman reports out of West Virginia. And honestly, if I was a big old creature, Bigfoot or Dogman, those are the kinds of states that I would want to be in, because, you know, Kentucky, West Virginia, you've got, not only do you have plenty of food, cover, and water, but you also have, you got caves in the area that if you so chose to be a cave dweller, you could do such a thing. And yeah, those are a couple of my favorite states. Kentucky as well. I've been there for purposes of Bigfoot. And I mean, there's areas actually named for caves in Kentucky. And you'd just walk up on them. They're not on any map or anything. Just don't go caving, people. Okay, let's just... I've seen those movies.
Take Shannon's advice. I see way too many videos on Instagram of people stuck in caves, and
please don't do it.
And that's not even involving any monsters. So yeah, you stay out of those things.
Yeah, just cave spiders and no air. Do you need anything else?
Exactly.
Just keep you out.
And every once in a while, somebody that gets stuck to the point where you can communicate with them, but they're never getting back out of there, and they have to slowly die.
Oh my gosh, that nutty putty thing is just
terrifying. Yeah. Well, on that note, Shannon, let's move on to the beyond. But first, for those that aren't going to join us there, can you share with us where you can find Into the Fray and On the Trail Of, and basically all this wonderful paranormal stuff that you're working on?
Absolutely. So home base for Into the Fray is intothefrayradio.com. But then, of course, I'm on all the podcatchers. I do air it on YouTube just with static stuff. I do have a Patreon side with bonus content, just like Derek does. And then, of course, beyondthefraypublishing.com for all of the books that we publish over there. They live in the same universe that Derek's show does, that my show does, all the nonfiction, paranormal, cryptid, UFO stuff. And then I know that Seth has released on his Small Town Monsters YouTube channel all of our On the Trail UFOs. I believe it's just the first season. Don't hold me to that. But go over to SDM YouTube and you can check that out if you haven't seen it. And then The Dogman Triangle, Werewolves in the Lone Star State is out on Amazon Prime right now, with Dogman Territory coming out sometime later this year. But Derek, thank you so much.
Of course. And of course, everybody, go check out these documentaries. It really gets you on the ground at some of these locations, and they're digging up stories that otherwise wouldn't be shared. And if you listen to Into the Fray or you enjoy Shannon's podcast, support her on Patreon, because that's the best way to help these small shows like mine and hers. That's money directly to the artist that we can use in ways to grow the show and stay alive, essentially, as we create all this content. So if you love her show, which you should, go give her a follow on Patreon. And that said, if you would like to join me on Patreon, you can go to monstersamongus.com and click the Patreon tab, or just go to Patreon and search for Monsters Among Us. $5 a month gets you all the bonus footage, bonus content. There's no footage. And $1 a month gets you ad-free. So again, join us in the beyond, where you hear stories like this anonymous call from the state of Oregon.
Hey, Derek. So I got a story for you. So I am calling from Hillsboro, Oregon, and I have a story that I think you might like because it is related to your first encounter. That's right. I saw an ABC. I should...